When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, host of the Boiling Point podcast. My co-host, Dave Vale, and I will bring you thoughtful discussions with leaders who are positively impacting our world. This is The Boiling Point, where leadership and inspiration meet.
Dave, you and I kind of had a deja vu moment the other day, didn't we?
Yeah, I was driving a section of highway that I drove a couple years earlier, and I had this need to call you. And it was probably the section, it was just into Quebec, just across the New Brunswick border. This time was on my way to Montreal. It was the weirdest thing. I phoned because we have a project we're going to be working on together. And you picked up, which was cool. You were on a bit of a high because you had just did a presentation to a high school group. Was that right? Or middle school?
Actually, it would have been elementary, a grade 5 class. Spoke to them.
Yeah. And you just seemed like on another level. And you were just, it sounded like really connected with the kids and they connected with the topic. And then I think I saw a post that you put out, and I'm guessing it was related to the same presentation.
It was, yes. I got invited to speak to. So the province has been putting on a Wildlife Wednesday initiative. So about a month ago, I spoke virtually to a bunch of classrooms across the province on fly fishing, but then I also tied in leadership and how it's important for us to have passions and interests and like what we learn about that and this concept of who we are versus what we are. And so I ran into a lady actually in chapters, and she had said, she's a teacher, and said, oh, my class, we didn't get to partake in it. And I'm so sad we missed it. And I said, well, why don't I come in and do it in person? So I went and did it in person. And I love being able to do it in person for these talks. And it was so wonderful. The highlight of it was that at the beginning, I was sharing around, it's just kind of normalizing feelings. It's this feeling of even me walking into an elementary school, I had this like these flashbacks of how I felt in elementary school. And this was this not only fear of public speaking, but fear of speaking. So much to the point that my teacher had me in speech therapy because I would not speak. And she was convinced that I just couldn't, where my mom's like, no, Emily does not have a problem. Like, trust me. But even in just sharing that story with the kids right from the beginning, and then speaking about that it's okay to have these feelings and normalizing those. And at one point, the little girl, like one of the little girls, she raised her hand, I said, why do you think I'm sharing this story? And she made this comment about how, because it's normal to feel this way and it's normal to have emotions, but now you're teaching us what to do with them. And I was like, oh my God. Yes. Like these kids, like they just absorbed so much stuff. It was, and I got from it probably more than they did. Like it was just such a beautiful time. And this thing around like as leadership coaches that we really need to be implementing this in the younger generation as well. So yeah, it was a beautiful time. But however, back to that deja vu drive, you were on your way for a guys' weekend?
Yeah, I was getting away. I had chosen to drive to Montreal. So I was about, and I didn't realize this, but it's like an 8-hour drive with my son. So he could drive part of it, I could drive part of it, you know, so good windshield time together. When he's driving, there's no devices, right? So it's like I can, you know, I've kind of got him locked into a conversation. Anyways, it was great. I'm glad we did it. We met my brother and my nephew. So it was kind of this boys weekend away. And I got up Sunday and I was like, man, we got 8 hours to drive back. So I said, Liam, you got to drive part of the way back too. He's no problem. So we get all the way back to Edmonton, right? Which is just across the New Brunswick border from Quebec. And I said, your turn to drive. He starts driving and the snow just starts coming down, right? And talk about like, what do you do? Do you just, you know, like he's 17. He hasn't been driving for a year yet. Or has it been a year? Yeah, like maybe roughly a year. And I'll tell you, I was nervous especially when we're going by two transport trucks and we're right in the middle and then you can't see the road. It was one of those kind of snowfalls. To his credit, you know, was able to navigate it okay. We didn't crash, thankfully. And I said, you know, I don't know if it's fair for you to be driving in this kind of weather at this stage. So anyways, he drove all of half an hour. I drove the rest. But what a awesome time. You know, like we had music trivia. We had movie trivia. It was a really good time. It was a really good time. And the game was fun. And Montreal was fun and did some things I wouldn't typically do. So it was a nice weekend away.
Nice. Love that. What a great opportunity for Liam to gain experience in driving in those conditions with you right there with him.
That was an interesting thing because I said, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I was just so like, it was one of those one situations where you're like, you know, the transport trucks are blowing snow, you know, into you. We're on the left lane. You can't really see where you're at. You're in between two. Like you couldn't be in a worse place, really. And he said, well, I got to learn how to drive in these conditions at some point. But I was thinking, yeah, but not when it's dark Sunday night. Like, I just don't know. It's not going to work. It was more about me. I was just not, I was not enjoying it. So, but you're right. You know, how do we learn how to do that? By exposure, by doing it, all that kind of stuff. So anyhow, he'll be off to university. He'll have a lot of chances to drive through that weather. But the weather is different now too, right? And our guest we're going to introduce is talking about, you know, -7 in Austin, Texas. Like the world is changing. In crazy ways, kind of scary ways, actually.
Yeah. And so speaking about our next guest, we have Kelly Russell DeVarney on the show today. Kelly is a certified positive psychology coach who both coaches and facilitates training for emerging leaders, teams, and C-suite executives. Her background in sociology allows her to bring a unique perspective to coaching culturally diverse clients, helping them gain clarity, support, skills, and influence to achieve their goals and address complex organizational challenges. Notably, Kelly has contributed to the field through her published organizational white paper titled An Authoritative Report on Leadership Coaching in Nonprofits. Kelly, welcome to The Boiling Point.
Thanks, Emily. Thanks, Dave. Wonderful to be here.
Nice having you here.
And yes, -7. -7 in Austin, Texas, with a little bit of snow on the ground.
Like, when's the last time that's happened?
It happens twice a year, maybe most. I just don't know that we knew it was going to happen today. So it was a good surprise this morning. And I'm a former New Englander. I was born and raised in Massachusetts. So, you know, I'm not afraid of the snow. I kind of enjoy that little bit of snow on the ground. But -7, I could do without it.
And I think there's certain areas where it's just not supposed to be that temperature, which makes it even worse. There was, gosh, this is probably like 12 years ago now, my only time in Austin, Texas. I was at a triathlon training camp there and was so excited to go to the warmth. And it was one of those cold spells there.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And everyone was like, you're Canadian. You should be used to it. And I'm like, no, you don't get used to it. And there's a reason right now I'm not in Canada.
Fair. Yeah. Fair. Travel a couple thousand miles to be warm and not get that reward.
Yes. So Dave, Kelly and I were first introduced by Marilyn Orr, for our listeners, other executive coach, and Marilyn had said, you and Kelly need to connect. And so Kelly and I connected. And at the end of our conversation, which could have gone on forever, I said, I would love to have you on The Boiling Point to discuss everything that we are talking about right now, so all the listeners can hear it. So that is how Kelly and I initially connected.
Marilyn is the ultimate connector. And so, and I've heard your name many times and we've spoken before, Kelly. So this
we
is,
have.
Yeah, but we haven't seen each other. So, and Marilyn spent some time in Austin and now she's in Maine. So she's kind of experiencing the -7 weather, but in Maine. And speaking of Austin, I've had one trip there. I loved it. And I had fabulous weather and it was on the lakes and it was so amazing. But for me, what was really interesting was I was like, is this Texas? Like, it didn't feel like Texas, like in my head, what Texas is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I moved here more than 20 years ago from Massachusetts. And I remember saying to people, I'm moving to Austin, Texas. And they were like, why would you do that? Like, where are you going? That seems very random. And there, you know, it just wasn't a known city in the way that it is now. And now I get on planes and travel internationally, and the person sitting next to me will say, "Where are you from?" And I'll say, "Austin, Texas." And they'll say, "Oh, it's on my top five list. It's on my top 10 list." And I'm like, "How did that actually happen? Like, how did we go from a place that I was living to that no one knew to being like a happening place?"
You went there before it became this like major destination for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Tech hub. And
what took you there?
Technology. So my husband and I both started in tech. My husband continues to work in tech, and he had an opportunity. Actually, he had two opportunities. He had one to go to the Silicon Valley, out in California, and we had an opportunity to come to Austin, and didn't know really a lot about either of them. We were a young couple, had a couple of young kids, and spent some time in both areas. And California was hustling and bustling. Lots to see and do, but we were like, as a young family, it was a lot. And came to Austin. It was kind of like the best of both worlds. It was kind of like a small town in the shape of a big city, right? We had a symphony, we had a ballet, but you could get downtown in 10 minutes and there was no traffic. And it was sunny and warm in the winter, right? So there were lots of pluses, and we dove in.
And everyone followed.
And everyone followed. So if we could only have found the door to close it behind us, that would have been lovely.
And so speaking of diving in, Kelly, what got you into the coaching world?
It feels so random looking back, but I had actually applied, kind of thinking about the last chapter, professional chapter of my life. My kids were in high school, getting ready to go to college. And I had applied to several PhD programs, and I thought, you know, I think that's what I'll do last. Like, I think I'll go get a PhD and maybe I'll teach and, you know, do that on a part-time basis, really give back and have impact. And I was having lunch with a colleague here in Austin that I hadn't seen in about a decade. And they were like, "Oh gosh, you're going to go to a PhD program. You're going to do all of that time. Like what's behind that?" And I was like, impact. Like education had such impact in my life, obviously lives of people around me. Like, I'd love to have that kind of impact in other people's lives. And she asked one question. She said, "Isn't there anything you could do right now that might have as much impact?" And it spun me around. Like, I didn't know what to do with the question. You know, I kind of thought, well, I'm a fairly smart person. I feel like if there was something, I would have thought of it. And so that was in January. I had to actually make a decision on the PhD programs I had been invited to join by like April or May. So I had like 3 months to really like somehow noodle on this question she threw out. And during that time, someone said to me, "There's a new executive leadership program starting at the university supporting the MBA plus executive program. Would you be interested in giving it a shot and kind of coming in and doing some work with us and deferring your PhD?" And I said yes, and the rest is history.
Wow. Talk about that one changing question. Was she a coach, this woman who asked you that?
She was a coach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, what a coach-like question, first of all. And just how much those questions can just make a change.
Yeah, important changes. And I think that you know that it's an important question when you feel befuddled, right? When someone lands it and you think, I haven't thought that thought before. Right. And so, I think it was a real huge change. Now, does that mean I'll never do a PhD program? I don't know that that's actually true. But do I think that she was right, that there was impact to be had sooner? Absolutely.
Well, and the other thing about powerful questions is it stays with you, right?
It's haunting.
This many years later, you're remembering that question. And I think probably all three of us can remember points in time where someone just pose the question, which just stuck with you and actually changed the trajectory of your life, right? Which is such an amazing thing about coaching, I find.
Yeah. And if you think about I don't know if you can imagine how much time it takes to fill out like applications for PhD programs, but it's a boatload of work, right? And you're doing tests. And so I had just spent a boatload of time, had come to a conclusion that was all somewhat erased. And a lunching question, right? That you're like, how was I going so quickly down this route? And just took a detour that now, more a decade later, right, here I am with my own business and doing this full time.
And so your background in sociology is what really intrigued me to have you on the podcast and in speaking around culturally diverse clients. And actually, when you and I were chatting, I was just getting ready, I think, to go to Bolivia and talking about these culturally diverse places. And you had so much insight on that. What in that kind of, like, you're talking about like impact, how did you really see that you could have an impact in that area?
So I think my background, obviously my education background, I have 2 degrees in sociology, so a bachelor's and a master's degree in sociology. And I think that there's just a way to think about the world that's introduced in that field that was different than anything else that I had experienced that gave me insight to myself. And I think that insight was helpful for me to bring into my coaching. And that is this idea of a sociological imagination. It's being able to consider the structure, if you want to say the structure part of society, that helps us to advance towards our goals, our wants, our desires, that are actually happening right alongside that agency piece, but aren't as readily visible to us. So that's education systems, right? Economic systems, political systems, legal systems, family systems, right? They're all part of the cogs, if you will, of advancement that allow us to make progress. And I think that bringing that lens into coaching really allows me to ask questions that are outside of the framework of the engagement, right? Yeah, you're an executive, you work in this sector for this organization and this role, but all these other things are at play at the same time. And so to really use that sociological imagination to imagine what they might be and therefore to ask questions about them.
Do you have an example maybe that you could apply to this just to help someone listening that, you know, maybe new to coaching or has an understanding of coaching, but, you know, how the sociological perspective would impact coaching?
This is going to be the hard part. The hard part is to keep me short. Yes. So I'm going to try to keep myself short and not be so passionate and exciting.
You.
We're just going on. Yeah. So mute me, Emily. Agree to mute me if it goes too long. So, you know, I was thinking about this question actually after Emily and I got together, because she's one of the first people to be really curious about that. And we were talking again, she was traveling. I had done a little bit of research outside of the United States for my master's degree, and we were talking about those experiences. But it got me to thinking about my own current clients. And so I'll kind of walk you through some of my thinking about it and how this sociological imagination gets applied. So one of my clients was born in Asia and then emigrated as a young girl to the United States. When she showed up as one of my clients, one of the things that we talked about a great deal was confidence and assertiveness, right? Things that she wanted more of, that she thought would advance her professional role. She wanted some to actually have an experience of leadership. She thought she wanted to do some leadership in the future. And she was probably at this point around 30, early 30s. When someone presents like that, we have to make a choice, right? One is, if we think about it from the agentic side, right, that is all agency, right? Then we're actually talking about emotional intelligence. We're talking about skills, right? We're talking about like, oh, you're more on this empathetic, collective, collaborative side. Let's grow you in this direction, right? That's one line of questioning. But the other lines of questioning that might be present for this person are some of the, like, I'm going to call them, you know, immigrant myths, which is like, I just have to work hard, do my time, right, in order to advance, right? I've changed cultures, I've moved from here to there, and the way that, you know, any group of people that emigrate, make progress is to just put your head down, you know, don't stand out, drive ahead. And sometimes in that is this warping effect of meritocracy, right? We have this idea that all systems are meritocratic, right? This idea that like my input gets me a like reward. Not necessarily true in most organizations. So that's another lens to think about it. I could have thought about it from a gender lens, right? I could have thought about it from a generational lens. What's happening in this person's life generationally that they're coming to the conclusion that this is how to go about acting in the world in order to reach their goals? How is it as a female in this organization or in this sector? She worked in the tech sector. How does that sector influence her choices and her decisions, right, on the actions to take in order to reach her goal? And it sounds lengthy in the explanation of it, but this happens really, really quickly once you kind of start to use it, the sociological, you just get different lines of questioning than you were if your belief system was, oh, well, clearly what I need to do is upskill this person in confidence and assertiveness, right? Which could be an overly simplistic assessment or line of questioning that may not get the same results.
So just to carry that forward with this particular client, like, so what showed up there that may have been, you know, unique to that situation?
I think it's really empowering, right? It was empowering for me, like sitting in undergrad classes and grad classes, to recognize like there was a lot more happening outside of myself, right? That I didn't have a lot of control over, but I might be able to get a strategy around, right? Whether it's expanding networks or such, right? I recognize because of where I was educated, I may not have the same set of networks as somebody that was educated at a different institution, right? And so then I can close the gap because I can understand, oh, well, that might be a difference of network. I can have a strategy for that. I think this was the same for this client, right? It was really asking questions about who she was, right? How would it be for you as an individual, like your sense of values and integrity to show up more assertively and less collaboratively? Like, how would that impact you, right? Asking those subset of questions gives back someone like, oh, some information about other things that are happening inside of me rather than I'm lacking something that I need to go gain.
Yeah, I really appreciate that and you sharing that, Kelly. Do you remember for this particular client, like I'm curious as to what part of herself and even culturally she stepped into that she was able to bring forth into not just the position that she was working in, but in her life?
Great question. Well, because it's tricky, right? I mean, this is the warning that should come with every coaching engagement, right? I mean, I usually say it in my discovery sessions with new clients. I'm like, warning, even positive change has negative effects, right? Right? You change one thing in the system, even if that system is your family or your partner, right? And inevitably, that's change for them too. So yeah, you're completely right, right? How do I, if I learn this skill here, how does that translate when I go back to be with my family? How does that translate when I go back to be with my partner, right? Do I need separate scripts for who I'm going to be? How do I actually pull a thread through all of those pieces that are me, that are authentically me, right? So that it doesn't cause me to have more loss than gain. And I think for this client, gosh, A+ for like persistence, determination, tenacity, to keep showing up to really hard conversations, to go away and do the footwork to understand for herself how much to turn that dial, right? Like if we're going to say, and this is obviously simplistic, but if we're going to put empathy and assertiveness just to choose two onto a dial, how do I dial that in a way where I stay true to myself, advance my own goals, right? And yet not cut myself off from the people that I love the most that know me in a different way.
This is just kind of making me think of a recent conversation that I had with someone. It was with a guide, a fly fishing guide actually in Belize, and just around this like these cultural differences. I was fishing with him and I could not hear what he was saying. And I was like, you got to speak up. I can't hear you. And he wouldn't speak up. And then finally, when we were off of the boat, I said, listen, like, I cannot hear you. And he was like, but if I speak any louder, I'm yelling at you. And that's no way to treat a woman. And I was like, okay, like I
beautifully said,
however, and then, so it's like, okay, how can we kind of, you know, find that sweet spot that it's not yelling. I just need to hear you.
But wasn't that great information for you to understand his, I mean, I think that we're in the job of supporting people thinking about their thinking. I think that's right. That's a coach's role, right? I'm going to support you to think about your own thinking. And so that person introduced data that was, again, let's go back to sociological imagination, that you couldn't actually detect from him speaking softly. You couldn't actually put together what was happening, right? There was a system of respect happening, right? There was a system of gender happening. There was a lot happening in that decision to speak softly that then was decoded when, right, he brought forward that information. And I do think that that's the brilliance, because now we can solve for that. We can solve for, like, who are you and what are you attempting to do? Who am I and what am I attempting? Where's the middle between us so that we can meet it?
Looking to invest? Start your journey by exploring exchange-traded funds with GlobalX ETFs. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short, create baskets of stocks, bonds, and other assets that you can buy in a single trade. GlobalX specializes in ETFs that track emerging trends, like the rise of artificial intelligence, as well as strategies aimed to generate income potential. Visit GlobalXETFs.com to discover how you can get started.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. Isn't it bullshit to have to question where your food comes from? At Vital Farms, you can trace your pasture-raised eggs all the way back to the source, the pasture. On the side of each pasture-raised carton of eggs, you'll find the name of the farm where your eggs were laid. And when you look the farm up on their website, you'll get a peek at all the sunshine, fresh air, and open space the hens enjoy. Learn more and find out where to buy them at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit free.
I'm thinking of a client we're working with. It's part of a healthcare system in the United States, and they specialize in a particular type of surgery. And what's interesting is their surgeons come from all over the world. And now that we're talking with this, I'm just thinking it's so interesting because the coaching opportunities that are coming up are so connected to the culture they're coming from that they've identified. Like, as an example, like when a surgeon's coming in and, you know, very formal, everything's formal, but, you know, and would say, this is the culture I come from, and this is how you address people, you know, that are, you know, kind of formal leaders, where it's not really culturally appropriate within that organization. I just think of some of the challenges navigating that. And then, you know, some others, you know, that would be coming from a completely different culture, maybe much more expressive and not as buttoned down, but that's causing other issues. You know what I mean? Like, it's fascinating, but I've never really, actually, until you're talking about now, it's part and parcel with the opportunity to support them. But I'm just thinking the underpinning of the work you do is so important to this, right? And also gives us so much more information. And you talk about, like, metacognition or thinking about thinking. That's the beautiful part of, and maybe someone listening to this is going, what are these guys talking about? But that's the, like, that whole, you talk about the discovery piece. I find that one of the most fascinating points of intersection with a client or a coachee is when you get to learn kind of the lessons learned by this and what they decide to bring in to the, you know, and to share with you. So you're learning about, you know, the whole person, not just this person who has this particular title. But inevitably I find, Kelly, that that cultural awareness will seep into the discovery session when someone feels it's, you know, psychologically safe.
I mean, that's spot on, right? You know, being safe, right? Can I express myself? I also work in healthcare in the United States, have for the past 5 years, and one of the largest healthcare institutions in Texas. And yes, that international, there's so many good questions in there, right? And it's, again, I think it's really empowering to the client, right? For you to kind of partner and come up beside them in that journey I'm thinking about a surgeon that I had as a client a few years ago, who had got just consistently was getting dung on their feedback forms within the institution as being kind of shut down emotionally or cold. And the morning that we met face-to-face in person, probably 4 years ago, maybe just prior to COVID, and he and I sitting in a very small room, kind of like pretty close proximity to one another. And he had been like raised in the Middle East. And then he had gone to medical school in the UK. And then he had, you know, taken a job in the United States, right? That's a lot of transition to not only have to process, but to actually integrate, right? And so what's up with this feedback you're getting? Like, what's happening here? And it was such a beautiful exchange where he said, you know, where I grew up, like men express their emotions like fully. Like we were allowed to cry like when we were sad and, you know, grieve like loss. And, you know, that happened real time. And he said, but then I went off to med school and then I took a job in the States and I recognized like, oh, like men do masculinity different here. And if I do it like this, I'm an outsider. So I actually am trying to mirror or match what others are doing in order to be accepted so that I can be an insider, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, right? What great work he and I were able to do because I was able to acknowledge the reality that wasn't in him as a person, right? It wasn't tied to who he was. It was tied to his experience of these different places and these different social settings and organizational settings and what they were demanding of him and his ability to try to translate that real time in order to, I don't know, check the box, right? And he was doing it poorly and wanted to do it better. And that was the work that he and I engaged in. What a beautiful moment that couldn't have happened without psychological safety and confidentiality and like the partnership and awareness of a coach that sits in front of you and says, yeah, I hear that.
Yeah, definitely. I've experienced that a lot. And keeping on that, the healthcare topic, if that reminds me of a client who is an oncologist and a female, and she was speaking around how she felt kind of during her, she was like medical school. She was now kind of having these revelations of how like almost traumatized she had become in needing to let go of parts of herself in order to be in this position where she felt like she always kind of needed to prove herself. And, you know, in speaking around like just who she is at the core and what her values are, and then almost that needing to kind of undo some of these ways that we feel like we need to condition ourselves, which in many ways is just based on fear and this wanting to belong and just how deeply rooted those things are, which is why it's so important for, I think, as coaches to really get to know each other at that personal level, but providing that space for the client to be able to get to know themselves.
Yeah, beautifully said. And that belonging piece, right? I mean, I remember sitting in those early undergraduate classes and like just thinking about myself differently, right? Let's think about society through the lens of gender, you know, let's think of society through the lens of class. Let's think of, right, just, and you're just literally putting on the cap, right? To be able to really tune in into like, what are all of these cogs that are actually happening in the background of our lives? But we can't, it's really hard to bring them forward to be able to see the part that they play, again, in either advancing or sometimes preventing our forward progress. But being in those conversations sometimes allows us as coach practitioners to help the client bridge the gap.
That just kind of leads, you know, so beautifully to something I was thinking about as I'd be curious about your perspective, Kelly. Like, so for someone listening and is sitting back and thinking, you know, I'd like to do some of this deeper work. Maybe they're not prepared to hire a coach or at this stage for whatever reason, but, you know, do you have anything you'd recommend in terms of helping kind of uncover, you know, many of these things that we all carry around and maybe haven't thought it through or haven't fully thought it through? Any recommendations around that?
first of all, like, aren't we fortunate in many ways? We don't always talk about how fortunate we are to live in 2024 in a world where we're technically, right, so advanced that you can actually Google and access, gosh, so many courses online, right, that are like Sociology 101 for free, right? Whether it's Coursera, whether it's going to, you know, some of the MIT open classware or coursework, lots of things online that we can now just take in, right, in small amounts in order to have a better understanding of ourselves. So I'm going to say, not only just for our clients, I think for coaches, like, I continue to kind of get up and off my soapbox to be able to say, like, why doesn't every coach training have a sociological component, right? Where we're really trying to stretch our thinking about individuals and us collectively and us globally, right, in these types of ways. But I think these are great ways to do it. I think you can access videos. I think you can access books now that really are in this early stage of sociology. Some of the sociologists that I love, whose writings you can find everywhere, that are early sociologists are like Giddens is one of them, G-I-D-D-E-N-S, writes a lot about this. You've got the concept of dramaturgy in there, front stage and backstage personas. You can get lots of videos on those. But we're really rich now as a society in order to get in and just take a little bit of this to have a better understanding of ourselves and others.
For you, being able to work with so many culturally diverse clients, do you find yourself kind of in this thought process of like, what from other cultures do you want to kind of take and integrate into yourself? Like, do you find you changing within that?
Gosh, I hope so, right? I mean, I think that was one of the promises of coaching. I don't know what training the two of you went through for coach training, but the promise of coach training was to change yourself, right? You should be changing right alongside of your client. You should be growing and developing right alongside your client. So yes, absolutely. My clients are teaching me all the time if I allow them the space to do that. And sometimes that's just through the tool of silence, knowing when to speak and when not to speak. I ask my clients a lot of questions, especially clients whose genders are different than mine, whose ethnicities are different than mine, nationalities are different than mine. I'm always asking them, sharing an observation and then saying, is that how it sounds or feels for you? Is that how you're experiencing yourself or experiencing the situation? In order for them to say back to me, they're teaching me all the time about what I didn't know right before we had a conversation. So yes, I think that that's never ending. And I do think that, again, that this gets back to where are we post-COVID in a time where we have record right reporting and surveys of loneliness and the sense of disconnection, right? This ability of ours to share and learn and be in the fray with one another in order to be more connected. I think we've got some great traction here post-COVID, not only as a society, but I think within organizations, and I think leaders should take the reign here.
You segued beautifully into somewhere I wanted to take you, in the sense that you are a phenomenal communicator and bringing people together for connection. And I noticed that, I mean, when you and I first started speaking, that like it being psychologically safe, I had the complete honor of going to a workshop that you and Marilyn put on around connection. And how do you find, like, yeah, in this post-COVID world and such a virtual world now, around how can we continue to connect even more? And even that of like, are we even aware that we're experiencing feelings of loneliness?
Well, the reporting would say that we are. I think maybe the question is, are we tracking well with ourselves about it, right? And maybe even the net negative consequence, right, for an individual, an organization, a team, a society, a family, right? that disconnect feels or experiences. I think that maybe we're less good at that, right? We can kind of forget ourselves. I do think that connection in the last two decades moved at like level two or three in, you know, Maslow's thinking about hierarchy of needs. It actually moved down to a basic need. Somewhere in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, it was advanced as a primary need. I think many of us don't know that about ourselves, that we have a primary need for connection that is not different than our need for safety and security and like food and water and nourishment, all of those things. I think it sits right alongside. So I think bring that awareness forward. It's really, really important for individuals to know that they need to feed themselves in this way. I think pre-COVID, and this is just a sense that I have of my own experience of the world, I think pre-COVID, our structures supported greater connection, to your point, right? Once so many of us went remote, right? There was an automatic disconnect because the structure changed. And so that's a great question. How do we put connection back in a world that is working remotely or in a hybrid manner? How do we keep connection? And I don't know that we know that 100%, but I do think there's a really good amount of research about this because, you know, it was the 1990s when some of the Silicon companies actually went remote fully. And in going remote, they started to track like what worked and what didn't work. But what we know that having teams and organizations and leaders meet one-on-one still, even if it's remotely, just have conversation, not about an agenda, not about the goals, not about the budget, just to talk one-on-one as people. What's going on with you? How are you? How is your family? What have you been up to? How was your trip? How was your drive with your son? Right? All of these things, bringing them in and making them important. Those were conversations that were the fabric of trust and psychological safety and connection for most of us. And they didn't often take place in a meeting. They often took place in the parking lot or on the stairs or in the elevator, right? So I do think bringing it to the foreground is what I would say. Like, let's bring it to the foreground and let's make belonging part of the future. Let's, you know, we love competence. We love autonomy. Those seem, you know, pretty efficient mechanisms to increase productivity in organizations. I would love to see us dive full throttle into like belonging. Let's see how that advances not only organizations' bottom lines, but society and community.
I'm thinking of the work we do with teams at times, and just how impactful it can be to, as you're facilitating this work, is to slow people down and, you know, have them, you know, like do a partner exercise where they just ask each other questions about nothing to do with work, just about, you know, who their teammate is, you know, one little known fact, like just, you know, the silly questions we'd ask. But, you know, and then introduce your partner to everyone else. And it's inevitably, I mean, people work together for sometimes decades and they'll go, "Geez, I never knew that about you." And for what, I don't know what it is about the human, you know, experience, but when you get in a work setting, a lot of work settings aren't conducive to having the, or don't maybe naturally bring those forward. So I agree. I think that's just, the idea of belonging would be so impactful if that was like, you know, a core value of an organization. And think of what that does for retention. And oh man, I mean, and well, as I'm thinking it through, I'm like, well, how many times, you know, like, have I actually talked to folks on the roster about, you know, it probably happens, but maybe I could be more deliberate about it, right?
I just want to say, Dave, like, I think that's a really important point, right? You said, I don't know why it doesn't happen. And I think if I was going to step into the shoes of a sociologist, like, it's because that's how work has been structured, right? In the past, we, like, there was a part of us you left at home. There was a part of us you left outside the office, right? Emotions didn't have a place in the office, right? All of these taboos that we were kind of raised through structures of education and family and mental, right? We're being taught, right, how to be in the workplace. But we get to decide. To your point, like, how empowering that an organization could say, you know what, we're going to just go full throttle into belonging. Let's see what we get from that. You can change that structure just by making one thing more important than the rest, and then measuring it, which I'm a huge fan. Like, let's do metrics on it. Let's follow the research. Brilliant research out there. And, you know, Emily got to sit in some of this with the full day workshop that Marilyn and I offered on Connection, which is there are some brilliant thinkers who've been thinking about these things for a really long time. And we know what those things are. So we can actually do them more skillfully, either as facilitators, trainers, coaches, or leaders.
I'm going to share, Kelly, one of a big takeaway that I had from that workshop that I went
on. Oh, yes. I'm excited to hear.
It was timed so perfectly because it was right before, like a few days before I left to go to Africa and was gone there for a little over 5 weeks. And for me, how that workshop gave me time to think about that concept of loneliness and how I can go on these big trips and I'm usually always around people in some capacity and I can kind of be on this high. And then I come home and I almost experience like a couple of days of a low. And I thought prior to this workshop that that was loneliness. And it was me just integrating back into my life of being on my own and all that kind of stuff. And it always just felt so like just kind of polarizing. And during that workshop, I realized that around this thing of connection, because I have a really big group of people that I can always connect with, but that when I go away, I have a tendency to lose connection with myself. And that it was that, and so being just so much more intentional on this trip that I stay fully connected to not just everyone who I'm traveling with or working with or everything else, but that I fully stay connected to myself. And the flip side of that was I was able to come home and just so easily transition into just being back. And that it was almost this feeling of loneliness was happening when I was away and kind of missing myself more. Yeah. And it's through journaling, through taking time to actually intentionally think about these things that we can so easily just dismiss and we just keep carrying on. But yeah, how many valuable lessons came from being intentional about even just looking at those things in a different way. So thank you for that.
Gosh, well, first of all, clearly you had a head start and you've been in this space working on yourself and developing yourself for a very long time. And so I'm going to say this was just one more piece for you to go further. But yes, I think so. I think that understanding how connection works for us, what the experience of connection can be when you're by yourself and when you're intentionally with others and to the point that we raised in that all-day workshop, when you're out with others, right? Barbara Fredrickson says so well, I think she's at the University of Pennsylvania now, and she says so well, like that connection we're having with people, just momentary connection throughout the day, when someone holds a door open for you, when you're exchanging money with a cashier at the grocery store, right? If you make it important and you see the value of the exchange between two human beings going through their lives, it can fill your tank. Before that was introduced to me, I had no idea I was just wasting or ignoring, right, the ways to fill my tank that were ever present to me. So yes, I think that that's beautifully said again, like that idea that, hey, I have some connection to myself that I have to maintain before I get to connect with others, or maybe in lieu of connecting with others.
Yeah. And that even just kind of makes me think of it's like when you run into someone in the street, it's almost like you don't even have to have a conversation with them and you can kind of tell how they are inside, or even how many times like I remember flying on Christmas Day and the flight attendant was like, you are so happy to be flying on Christmas Day. Like I wasn't talking to anybody. I was just kind of going around my business. But it's this feeling of when we have that inner peace within ourselves and when we have that connection within ourselves, other people pick up on it and it makes you approachable and even open to being able to have connection with other people because maybe they feel psychologically safe to be able to connect with you or spark up a conversation with you. Or that connection can just be, like you said, just a simple smile and make eye contact.
But isn't it funny that these aren't things we learn, right? Or they're not things that sit anywhere on your curriculum, right? And once you're aware of them, like the added benefit, right, is never ending.
Yeah. And why it's not the norm. Why people are almost like, oh my gosh, like, why are you happy? They're almost like surprised. I'm like, why are you smiling? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, just like carrying on my life.
But ever present, intentional, living a really intentional life. I mean, you are doing a lot of labor in order to show up like that consistently. And yet we get as coaches to be able to influence others to get on that journey.
And sometimes there's serendipity too, right? Like I was thinking of a flight I took recently. My phone died. They didn't have a screen on the seat in front. And so I just started talking to the guy next to me. He's had such an interesting background. We had this great conversation. Before I knew it, we're landing in Chicago. And it was all because, you know, he said, oh, I can plug that in for you. I've got this. He had a, you know, like a portable battery or whatever. That's how the conversations got. But other than that, we would have been locked into our devices, you know. So sometimes just, you know, it was just good fortune because I met someone who I really, you know, enjoyed and had a really interesting story.
And yet we don't know ourselves that well, right? I mean, again, like, you know, if you ask most people, hey, I'm going to take your phone away from you while you're on this flight. And what we really want you to do is engage with the people around you. Like most of us would be put off by that. Maybe I should say most Americans. Maybe I won't speak for Canadians,
but
I'll say most Americans would be put off by like, no, give me my phone. I actually don't want to talk to the people around me. I just want some peace and quiet. I want to get from here to there. And yet we don't know ourselves well enough to know the joy that comes when you actually do open yourself right to the people around you and be curious and be in that space and be present with them for the period of time that you're there and how filling that can be.
Well, speaking of connection and conversation stuff, we're like almost at an hour here. And I'm just like, what happened? I was like thinking, I was looking at the timer thinking we'd be around 20 minutes. it's fun like to have, and this is actually, you know what I love about the podcast and it kind of pulls me always into this is to reconnect with Emily, but then, and to connect with the guest. And I find it, you know, in this topic in particular, is a very interesting to me. And I, you know, we say this to a number of guests, but, you know, it's one of those things where we could certainly go deeper and go have another conversation, I'm sure, because there's a whole bunch of work you've done with nonprofits we haven't touched on. If people aren't watching YouTube, would you let the listeners know how to connect with you in terms of, you know, and learn more about you and maybe book some time with you or find out how you can come into their organization?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. So my company is Vantage Coaching, and I am in Austin, Texas, and I do have a website and a way to connect with me there. You can also find me on LinkedIn, as everybody else is there as well, and connect with me through there. And I am readily available for conversation. I often say to people, like, coaches are the least boundaried people. They so want to connect with others and be a resource for others. Please reach out. I'd love to have a conversation.
Wonderful. Yeah, Kelly, I love that. And you do, like, you, I can speak from personal experience, you do make that open and sincerely mean that. So listeners, definitely encourage you to reach out to Kelly. And so we will list all of Kelly's information and any extras we discussed in the show notes. And the best place to find that is on our website. We're active on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and this video version will be available on YouTube and Facebook. And of course, the podcast is available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. We will see you next time.
Thank you for listening. Follow or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app or visit BoilingPointPodcast.com for more.
Hi, this is Candace Sampson, the voice behind What She Said. My show is your destination for stories that not only entertain, but also educate and empower. Every week, I spotlight strong female voices from across Canada, women who are changing the narrative and driving change. Don't miss out on these inspiring episodes. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music, or head over to whatshesaidtalk.com.
What She Said can also be heard on blasttheradio.com, Mondays at 5 p.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. That's blasttheradio.com.
It's time to dive into the stories that truly matter.